Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So the occupiers of the New School cafeteria express solidarity with the student protesters in Athens. In the age of global communications, does unrest travel as quickly as a text message? Turns out that while the violence and protests were erupting in Athens, 500 media professionals were there for a conference. Andrew Lamb, an editor with New American Media, was one of those journalists, and he wrote an essay about how the media responded to what happened. Andrew, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
You write about the disconnect between the media professionals at the conference and the actual news happening on the streets. Talk about it.
Well, you know, in fact, we were gathering to talk about the state of the media and how, you know, we've been usurped by the MSN, Twitters, Facebooks, and so on. And there it was happening out on the street, and we were completely out of the loop, including the Greek journalists who were there. It was funny because I got there on the night where the shoot was shot, and I walked around, and there were a lot of young people talking and looking at their cell phones. And I just thought, well, you know, I guess it's just the global world in which you are kind of distracted by your cell phones. But I had no idea that they were actually were arranging riot of protesting. In fact, by the time I got back to the hotel, part of Greece started, part of the city started to burn, and the media had no report on it, simply because all that twittering really did not include any professional journalist. They just thought the whole thing had happened horizontally, and the media was completely out of the loop.
And I gather at the same time that you're critical of professional media for being so out of the loop, you're also critical of the way citizen journalism was used in Athens?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fault is on both sides, but I think the problem with the reporting by citizens is that there is an inherent bias when especially it comes to people who are going out to protest. I mean, the question whether or not this youth was shot directly and in cold blood, as everyone described it, or not, was not really answered until the coroner's report came out a few days later. But before that had happened, everyone, including the journalists who really didn't cover the story until 2 days later or a day and a half later, they all say that he was killed in cold blood because of the people who were there, the witnesses, who actually were, a lot of people were protesters themselves. So it turned out the bullet was dented, meaning that the policeman who declared his innocence by saying that he shot overhead and, you know, the bullet ricocheted, no one believed him. And there was the piece of evidence that came out 3 days later. And it was, you know, it brought very little news, and the protests and the riot continued.
Right. So that basic fact that the shot was actually fired into the air, not at the student who was killed, and a ricochet hit him, didn't really get out because of the sort of viral nature and groupthink nature of personal media, correct?
Yeah. But I think what's disturbing is to have professional journalists relying on that information without verification for themselves.
Right. Of course.
And everyone was making their judgment accordingly.
At the same time, if somebody fired into the air in a situation where it could have ricocheted and killed somebody, then that's an issue in its own right.
Sure. But it's only not, as the journalist started describing, as in cold blood, and they used the term murder. You know, so freely. I mean, I hate to say that I'm here trying to, support the cop's point of view, but I'm just after what happened, what really happened.
Your organization, New America Media, do you consider yourself part of New Media? What do you do?
We actually, I do reporting and writing, but we actually aggregate news from ethnic media groups across the country as a way to include more community news into the network of, you know, voices.
So how do you see the optimal use of Twitter and cell phones and blogs, which we know added many details very usefully to the coverage of the Mumbai terrorist attacks, for example? How do you best create that professional amateur partnership?
I think as a way to do it, but you cannot treat it as equal footing. I mean, you know, it's fascinating what happened in Mumbai, for instance, when people were still hiding in the ballroom upstairs in the Taj Mahal, and the news media started opening open 24-hour conversation, and people called in and say, "Oh, my friends are okay. They're hiding on the second floor of the Taj Mahal." Even when information is true, there has got to be some kind of accountability on the media part in filtering the news, because here there's this piece of information that is disseminated widely, and you know the terrorists had access to BlackBerry. They were just as high-tech as everybody else. So how do you filter this information, be it true or rumor? You know, there has got to be a way in which the mature media figure a way out to incorporate citizen reporting and yet be responsible for that information.
Andrew Lamb, an editor with New America Media, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Sure.